Hello?
Hello?
Hello? You
pod
to win the game. That's the great thing about sports.
You pod to win the game.
All right, welcome into You Pod to Win the Game. I am Charles Robinson here today with Charles McDonald, Shorey Epstein, the entire NFL. Everything's wrapped up in a bow now. Aaron Rodgers is out there practicing today. He's practicing. He's practicing with the Jets. Lamar Jackson is signed. I don't think there's really anything left to do. DeAndre Swift got traded. I don't know what storylines are really left out there. We just wrapped it all up. We can all go home until late July. Hopefully that's the way this will work.
Goodbye.
You ready? You ready? Yeah, goodbye.
See ya. Yeah, C-Mac told us a while ago he's throwing his phone into off a bridge into the water tomorrow, Tuesday. So,
yeah, off the Statue of Liberty.
If you guys are listening to this Monday night, text him now if you want a response.
At the Pro Bowl games this year, they had a competition to see like if non-receivers and skill guys could catch punts. So I think that's what I'm going to do with my laptop. Like, if you want a 16, 17-inch MacBook Pro, go stand at the bottom of the Statue of Liberty tomorrow at some point, and it's going to fall off. You need to be ready to catch it. It's going to be there, I promise you.
I've written stories on my phone. I've
heard stories from the club before.
They just tell you, hey, you got a phone. Text it to us one graph at a time.
Oh, yeah. The little notes app.
I apologize. I'm a little sick today. So if anybody here, if I sound raspy, it's not my fault. However, one man who is not sick, I want to talk about Lamar Jackson. We didn't really have a chance to dive into this deeply because it happened right on the doorstep of the draft. But as everyone knows, 5 years, $260 million, $185 million in guaranteed money. So Trump's the Jalen Hurts contract still does not quite get near that Deshaun Watson. But definitely now I think we can say the Deshaun Watson contract's going to be seen as an outlier. Kyler Murray's come in. Lamar Jackson's come in. I think the next round of quarterbacks, it'll be expected that they'll push more in the direction of, and obviously Jalen Hurts has come in the direction of the last three quarterbacks who have signed. Interesting, though, is you kind of have this question out there floating around, like, well, why? Like, why all of a sudden Lamar was holding out and what changed, and, you know, why was it this, was it the Jalen Hurts contract that stimulated it? I think it was the Hurts deal. People have to remember, he was going to play for $32 million in 2023. He's not going to play for $32 million. That would have been a loss, a net. Go ahead and we can argue about the length of the contract and whether he'll realize all the contract. As far as average annual value, that's going to be a net loss of $18 million, $19 million. He had actually played on the tag. Don't you guys think that that was part of what stimulated this? At some point, he had to sit there and stare at the reality that he was going to make, you know, $32 million in a submarket deal in 2023 for what was already on the table.
I think the reason to me that that doesn't seem like the number one factor here is that that wasn't a variable in the last week. Like, that has been the case since February, since late February, he knew he was getting put on the tag. March, he was tagged. And then even after that, he wanted that trade request. He wanted the fully guaranteed deal. So to me, it really feels like Jalen Hurts' contract was this glaring reminder that even the quarterback who just took his team to a Super Bowl isn't getting fully guaranteed. I'm not either. Let's get it done. And then I think having Odell Beckham Jr. in the house, and obviously I don't know to what degree the Ravens said, hey, we're going to get you a receiver in the first round. Obviously, they did get Boston College receiver Zay Flowers for him. And so that he's finally getting the weapons and the offensive coordinator that's going to allow him to, in theory, open up the passing game after such like a run-heavy ideology and also cast of talent. But I don't know. I get that the money makes sense and that you wouldn't want to give that money up, but I think that that was already at play before last week.
I think there's just like a personal, practical point you get to where you're like, okay, obviously I would love to get, you know, in this scenario, $230+ million guaranteed to beat the Deshaun Watson contract. But like, you keep negotiating, the Jalen Hurts deal comes in, and at some point, just like for yourself and your own self-preservation, it's kind of hard to sneeze at $185 million guaranteed with injury protection on top of that. Like, you know, the full-time contract, or the, you know, the fully guaranteed contract, it was the goal. I think it's an admirable goal to have for just like the labor practices in the NFL, but there's still a personal side to this. And I think for Lamar, you kind of got the point, like, who the hell am I to turn down? Like, all this money, it's sitting right here. All I have to do is just sign my name. And, you know, I do think that his fight was good. He got pretty far. He got to be the most highest paid quarterback in the league, you know, the newest highest paid player in NFL history. And hopefully his play gets to warrant that, because the Ravens, they absolutely need him. And I think he got a contract that showed exactly how bad they need him in the building.
Did he win his fight?
That's a good question.
And what do you think he's going to say when we hear from him? I know we've seen like his SpongeBob smiling tweets, and I know we saw his whole like next video. Few years are about the block video.
Yeah.
But I mean, when he actually gets direct questions about why did you take this deal? Why were you okay not getting the fully guaranteed contract? Where do you think his head is at on all of that?
I don't know.
I know what I would say. I would lie. Yeah, I didn't actually want that fully guaranteed contract. That was just a negotiating tactic, and I'm happy with where we both ended up, and I'm looking towards being a Baltimore Raven for the next 5 years.
Now we're back to football.
I mean, he'll say what every quarterback says after they sign a big deal. They're always happy. I mean, even Aaron Rodgers was happy with Green Bay a year ago when he signed his contract extension. So it's, of course.
Wow, that was a year ago.
But yeah, it was a year ago. It was the longest year in history. he may do the, look, that was something in the media in terms of the fully guaranteed stuff. And he's already kind of done that. He's already suggested that we didn't know what we were talking about. Maybe he takes some shots at the media for kind of piling on about him not having an agent. And, you know, it's funny because he did have an agent. I mean, this is what when I kind of addressed the deal, he did have an agent. His agent was Jalen Hurts' agent, okay? And I congratulate him.
Right. Nicole Lynn still did negotiate the most expensive contract in the NFL.
She basically negotiated
two. She negotiated the two of them, yeah.
She basically did Hurts.
I literally put that in my notes. Did Nicole Lynn negotiate Lamar's contract?
Yeah. She basically did Hurts and Lamar Jackson. So, but I give Lamar credit from the standpoint of, If this was the plan, if it was, okay, let X number of quarterback deals come in, which he did over not just this offseason, but last offseason as well, and then pick his moment. If that was the plan, then it was absolutely successful. Like it was wonderfully and masterfully handled by him. I'm going to push back a little bit on people saying, oh, well, look how much money he saved from an agent standpoint. 3%. First off, agents don't earn 3% on mega quarterback deals. They don't. If you know anything and you talk to the people that negotiate them, you're lucky if you earn 2. And if you're not someone who brings other talent in to agencies, you might earn 1% if you are that player. So if you're Lamar and there are other people coming, you know, into an agency and you actually represent him and they're coming in because of Lamar, maybe Lamar, you know, only pays 1% in that scenario. So it's this idea that, well, I saved 3% times $260 million. First off, the 260 hasn't been realized. Secondly, the 3%'s not real. So we can just all walk that back a little bit. I don't know if he won or lost. I mean, I he did great for himself. I think everybody should be happy. Now I think really what matters is, are they surrounding him with enough talent now to maximize this deal? Because that's what you have to do. They went out and got Zay Flowers. That's great. We added Odell Beckham Jr. That's great. So that's two additional pieces that he has on top of Mark Andrews, J.K. Dobbins. Are the pieces around
Rashad Bateman's going to come back?
Yeah, Rashad Bateman is going to return, and you would think would be still a productive part of that system when he's healthy. Are the pieces there for them to hit the ground running with him? Because in any situation like this, when you sign a player to this deal, there's no more build. You have to immediately launch yourself into contention. That's the point of signing a deal like this. We saw the Broncos did it with Russell Wilson. It went horribly. And I would think that the reaction would be just as horrible with Lamar and the Ravens if they do not get off to a fast start and do really well in 2023.
I don't know. It's not like they really had a choice. And I do think that as far as like this Lamar Jackson era goes, this is probably the best collection of receiving talent that they've had. I think they have some questions on the offensive line, particularly like if Ronnie Stanley is ever going to get back to being the guy right. that he was and, you know, cleaning up some of the stuff on the right side of the line. But just like from a passing game standpoint, I think the Ravens are in a spot where they can take a pretty big leap this year, barring injury. And I kind of like what they've done to set themselves up between paying Lamar Jackson, hiring Todd Monken, getting Odell, drafting Zay Flowers, just to be like, hey, we're going to throw the ball a little bit more. And we have the asset allocation to prove that.
Yeah, I think I both believe that they have much higher upside in terms of the collection of talent they've assembled, but also that it's not going to get off the ground right away. I think with that much change coming in, like, when are they going to establish a rhythm? They're also playing in a difficult division, in a difficult conference. And so
new coordinator.
I'm wondering,
new coordinator.
Yeah, new coordinator, right. New coordinator, new talent. Lamar obviously has to, I mean, I'm not saying he hasn't been working out or staying in shape, but there obviously has been multiple focuses for him over the last few months. And he's going to now focus back pretty much entirely on football. And so I think that there will be a little bit of a climb, because as much as he'll have the best talent around him, will he also have one of the most difficult collections of competition that he's going up against in the AFC? Like, I definitely don't think they're AFC contenders right now. I don't even know that they're, I mean, even in their own division, I feel like the Bengals are pretty far ahead of them. The Steelers did some really good things this week. We'll get to them. You still have Deshaun Watson in the division. I mean, there's just so much they're going up against. So while I think it's going to be exciting and that they'll take a big leap, I don't think it's going to be easy by any means.
What do you think the expectations should be? Do you temper it a little bit and you say, you know, hey, want to be a playoff contending team this year? There's still things we're working out. Like you said, I mean, the AFC, if you look at the Browns, their two deep is really good. Their roster is actually extremely talented. The Bengals added a ton of pieces on defense in the draft. I like their draft quite a bit. And then, as you said, the Steelers have done plenty to like, and I think Pickett will take another step forward. I mean, I would hope Kenny Pickett would take another step forward at the quarterback position this year. The division felt mushy last year, and it didn't last long. Like, it doesn't feel mushy again going back into 2023. It turned around pretty quickly. You better hit 10 wins. I'm sorry. You pay a quarterback that much. You are expecting to be, I think you should be expected to be a double-digit win team, especially in a 17-game season. You damn well better hit that 10-1 mark. You don't, I feel like something else failed on that roster, or Lamar didn't play the way you expected him to, or some moves didn't pan out.
How much do you think that Lamar's health will factor into whether or not this was a good contract? Obviously, there's a degree to which it's outside of his control, and I think that it's going to be helpful that they now have most likely more of a focus on the passing attack in this offense in terms of keeping him healthy. But like, if he can't stay healthy, then do you say, well, you guys had a track record of that. Why'd you pay him?
Yeah, I mean, of course. I think there's no question. He can't be, the last couple of seasons can't be representative of where this is going. Part of the reason why the Kyler contract, on top of other factors, you're already a little sideways about it, is because he just tore up his knee. And he's going to miss half of this season. That injury, I mean, the season was already going on down the tank last year, but that it effectively destroyed one season. It's going to destroy another by running through half of this season. I don't have any confidence that Arizona is going to be able to be a highly competitive team without him until he gets back. You don't know how much longer that injury lingers. So, yeah, you're paying somebody this kind of money. You can't lose a season. And Kyler, you just lost two, okay? God forbid you pay out, you know, you're Steve Bisciotti and you're paying out $100 million plus, okay? And I'm just speaking in AAV. I'm not talking about cash flow, when the money gets paid out or whatever. In my mind, you have 5 years. That's the clock. He's going to make the money that he's going to make. And you lose a year of that or 2 years of that, that's $100 million. And it's a massive net loss for you. And I don't know if those injuries do factor. I don't know that, like, what do? You go to Lamar and go, you know what? We're going to have to figure out a way for your playing style to change a little bit to try and protect you. We did that with Cam, right? Oh, Cam, you can't run so much. We have to get on the refs because he's taking too big a hits in the pocket without flags. We've got to figure out a way to protect him. It didn't work. After that Super Bowl, it did not work. He declined rapidly because he kept sustaining injuries, particularly after he had the shoulder. You can't have that happen with Lamar. I mean, it would be a complete disaster. This is no, what did I call the Jalen Hurts contract? A species killer, an extinction level contract. That's what this is. But I think now that's what they all are. Every time you sign a quarterback to a deal that's locking up $250 million and the cash flow is paying out, $100 million in the first 12 months of the deal, it's a severe franchise altering deal forever. And if I was any of these teams, I would work very, very, very hard on making sure I had a backup quarterback who could save my ass if, Lamar has another situation where he's injured to end a season. No offense to Tyler Huntley, you have to have a higher level backup quarterback who can sustain and save you when a season goes down because you just lost your everything, basically.
I think there is an extraordinary amount of pressure on Lamar Jackson this year to play well.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, not even just the contract, but you go back to last season, right, where you get down to the end of the year, he's not in, Tyler Huntley's in, but what was working was, dude, the defense was playing like one of the elite units in the league by the end of the season. Mm-hmm. They had figured out whatever coverage bust situations they had. Kyle Hamilton was playing like one of the best safeties in football. Then you get down to like the wild card week, and I feel like that whole last 5 to 6 weeks of the season was just like, damn, if we had Lamar out here, this might be a different story for us.
Right.
I think there's some concerns about offense and some of the skill positions, or not skill spots, but offensive line talent that they have. But the defense should be ready to go. Like, I don't expect them to have a Miami Dolphins type game where you just have Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle not even being covered or picked up in coverage by guys. So the defense is going to be good, and they've invested in the passing game. It's tough for Lamar to really drag them across the finish line.
Well, I think you make a good point also, because anytime a rookie quarterback or a quarterback on a rookie contract, I should say, does well, they're pretty much always exceeding the value of their contract. And then they get paid, and it's like, okay, well, if you're not playing at a really high level consistently, then you're not making the money you're worth in the eyes of fans, whether that's fair or not. And so, yeah, like you're saying, that was already the case last year, and now his salary cap expectations should be a lot higher.
This should be not even a subject of conversation. If you cut a deal like this, you're under the gun. That's just how it's going to be from now on. And when you look prior to this deal and the Hurts deal, the Aaron Rodgers deal went horribly, right? The Russell Wilson deal, catastrophe. Fire a head coach. Who knows what the trajectory of the organization is now? Who knows if general manager George Payton, if things don't go well this season, whether or not there's some kind of rift between he and Sean Payton that does not exist now, but could if they have another poor season. Who knows what the hell happens to the Packers, okay, with Jordan Love. We have yet to see whether or not they pick up Jordan Love's fifth-year option, okay? Monday, May 1, we're going to know, okay? But if they don't pick that up, I'm really nervous about where the Packers are headed. Even the Matthew Stafford deal, right? You got a Super Bowl out of it, and that was great. But then he suffered the elbow injury. There was a problem. Shut it down last year. There's health concerns going into this year. They tore parts of the roster. Okay. So that even that feels like, hey, in 2023, if there's not a pivot and they don't lean back into winning, now you're starting to go, okay, well, we sacrificed everything to get Matt Stafford in here. We paid him. We got the Super Bowl out of it. Everything else is gravy anyway. But sometimes the gravy doesn't taste great. Even though you're happy with the Super Bowl, you still would have liked more. Everybody's greedy as fans. Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow when he does his deal, Justin Herbert when he does his deal, Trevor Lawrence when he does his deal, all these quarterbacks that do these deals, you have to be a contending team. And if you're not, you're going to get constantly from the media, from the fans, and at some point, probably from your organization through leaks. All right, well, let's throw it to the break now. We'll get back to the draft on the other side of it, talk a little bit about what we liked, what we didn't like. So let's hear from our sponsors. All right, welcome back in. Draft is in the books. You got all these priority free agents are signing now. 23 for 23, all juice team guys ended up on rosters. Weren't all drafted, but I'm going to really enjoy later seeing that Charles and I selected players that were not selected by NFL teams and they make rosters, which I will equate to us being superior general managers.
No, I already know I'm smarter than like 80% of the team. So I didn't pick Jahmyr Gibbs and Jack Campbell in the first round.
Man, okay. Well, since you bring that up, let's talk about what we liked and what we didn't. Maybe we'll go around, name a favorite class, maybe a least favorite class. I'll start off, and you talked about Detroit. I'll mention Detroit, okay, off the top. Really did not like the way that Detroit spent their picks, even though I do understand what's going on. When I looked at the players that they chose, the experience level, what the needs were on Detroit's roster, they picked a bunch of guys that are probably going to start year one, right? Picked a tight end is probably going to start year one. You picked a linebacker that's going to start right away. You picked a safety that's going to start right away. And then you picked a running back that in Jahmyr Gibbs, who should rotate in pretty effectively right away, figure out what to do with them. I get that. As Charles said, though, my problem with those four players is you had four picks in the first two rounds, and somehow you did not walk away with even one addition to a premium area of your team. Now, people will say, well, the premium addition came in Hendon Hooker in the third round when they draft him to be the backup. Fine, if that's the way that you want to satisfy this. When I asked teams, I was so frustrated with the running back position beyond Bijan. I was so frustrated with the wide receiver position, all these different positions. And I was saying, tell me who the best running backs are. Who's going to be good? Every time someone talked about Jahmyr Gibbs, they said, don't compare him to Kamara. Stop. He's not the same player athletically. He's not the same size. There's a lot of different things. He's got speed, yes, but he's small. And you know, how are you going to use him? Spending another first-round pick on an off-the-ball linebacker. I mean, we kind of went through this with Frank Schwab already and Jory and I, so I don't want to keep going into it. I just felt like it felt like a very meat and potatoes draft, and you got all dressed up in your tuxedo for that. You know, this was a tuxedo event for the Detroit Lions, and they went to, like, Sizzler, okay? And, okay, I mean, you walked out. I guess you were full. Great. Let's see how we feel about this. And I could be completely wrong. This could be years ago I panned a Seattle Seahawks draft I didn't like, and it ended up being a foundation of their team. And maybe that's what this will be. But I guess I look into that front office. I look at, you know, Chris Spielman. I look at John Dorsey being someone that's involved in the picks. I look at Dan Campbell as a head coach. I just feel like these are meat and potatoes football guys, and sometimes I think you gotta gamble a little bit more, and maybe that's what the Gibbs pick ultimately was. That's what one I didn't like. Let's go through what we didn't like first.
I'll just say I gave the Lions an F. They're the only team I got that got an F grade for me.
Man, F's pretty rough.
Honestly, I thought the Campbell pick was crazier than the Gibbs pick to me, because at least like with Gibbs coming into the first round, you know, you started to hear some stuff. Oh, you know, Jahmyr Gibbs. Don't be surprised if he ends up going in the first round. So I thought that meant like maybe late 20s. Pick 12 was pretty crazy. But, dude, the Jack Campbell stuff, like, there was no one that I had spoken to, whether it was, like, media, someone actually with the team, my buddies I know who really, you know, can evaluate football. No one had this guy as a first-round pick. Like, and it's funny because they could have got him, you know, later in the second round. So just to pick an off-the-ball linebacker who's not, like, a super outstanding player was pretty bizarre to me. And then you have... You know when a pick is bad is like when you see fans on Twitter like just going through all the coping processes of what happened with their pick. I saw someone yesterday say, did the Panthers mess up when they picked Luke Kuechly in the first round back in 2009 or whatever? Dude, he's like the best college linebacker of all time. That we need to just pump the brakes. It's okay. Your team made a bad pick. Okay. You got... Yeah, Luke Kuechly. He's not even Roquan Smith. Like, come on.
I mean, they should have just gone straight to Urlacher. Like, I mean, like, I, at that point, I don't, you know, who do you think this is going to be, Kuechly? You think it's going to be, I mean, like, let's be honest. Barring health, Kuechly would have been one of the best inside linebackers, middle linebackers in the history of the NFL, okay? And that's what you think you're getting here? It's a stretch, man. That's a stretch.
Yeah. And I just think like with if you're gonna take a linebacker in the first round, those guys have to be ace coverage defenders. Campbell's not that guy. To me, he's more of just like a two down kind of bumper in the box. He's got some speed, but it's not like when you got to turn backwards and run with someone in coverage. That's kind of where he struggles. So to me, Campbell's like a guy that you can find pretty much anywhere in the draft. And they took him with the 18th overall pick. And then Hendon Hooker, I just don't really see like these guys, this profile, it never works out in the NFL. You know, an older guy coming from an offense that doesn't translate at all to the NFL, coming off a knee injury, there should be like no expectation to me that he ends up being their long-term starting quarterback. And they should probably hope that he just turns out to be a viable backup, because we've seen guys in this Tennessee offense that's passed down from Art Briles at Baylor. These guys always put up numbers in college, but it's never translates to the NFL except for one season of RG3. So I don't really see what the point of that pick was. And like you said, maybe we'll be wrong, but I think the Lions' use of their draft capital was just completely inexcusable this weekend.
No, I think it's fair. And I think that kind of feeds into to where I was going with this, which is my least favorite class was the Falcons. And it wasn't because I don't like Bijan in a lot of ways. One, I think Bijan's an awesome player, awesome prospect. And I think that just the chaos of two running backs going as high as they did was really fun to cover, whether it was smart or not on the teams. But for me, like the whole thing we talked about going into this draft is that if you're going to take a running back that high, like be good now, be able to use them on that first contract, be able to use that skill playmaking. And I know that Bijan's more than a running back, but I just think like the Falcons kind of like took these players who might be good, but didn't fill their needs. And were, I mean, you talked about just sort of like how they had found guys like Tyler Allgeier who found value at that position later on. And I don't know, I just don't think, and it's like they needed a pass rusher. They haven't been getting sacks. They didn't really put that prime capital toward there. Then you go over to their pick with Matthew Bergeron, who might be a great tackle, but what are they doing moving him to guard? Like, I feel like they were kind of doubling up on positions of depth and also picking players where they're not going to be able to contribute meaningfully. So I just wasn't really sure what the strategy of it was.
You're looking at a situation with Gibbs at 12, where the total value of his contract based on that slot is nearly $18 million. Okay. And that's just for 4 years. That's not even counting the fifth year option. All right. So you have David Montgomery, who you just signed for 3 years and $18 million. And then you have this contract for Gibbs, which is effectively for $18 million. I don't know. It just feels like that's a lot to stack into the running back position. I could, again, be completely wrong on this. I just don't know how many backfields you want to spend 14, you know, 13 to $16 million, depending on how many years they play and what parts of the contract are ultimately realized. It just feels like a lot of assets to stack into the running back spot. And we would definitely criticize it if it was one player. People will say, well, it's not one player, it's two players. That's why it makes sense. You're splitting it between two guys in a rotation. I hope I'm wrong on all this. I really do. You know, I don't want to, Lions fans are trying to find some joy in this. I give them that. And we'll see. Plug and play starters, four guys. We'll see whether or not they come out of the box right away. Looking like it was worthwhile. How about upside? Maybe drafts that you liked. One of the drafts we got to talk about is the Eagles. I mean, Howie Roseman, I was, you know, you just text and you constantly get back this response about how it always feels like Howie's playing chess while everyone else is playing checkers and, you know, that whole cliche. But let's run down their draft really quick. Jalen Carter at 9, obviously out of Georgia. Nolan Smith, the edge out of Georgia at 30. Tyler Steen, the Alabama tackle at 65. Sidney Brown, the Illinois safety at 66. Kaylee Ringo, the corner out of Georgia at round 4, pick 105. Tanner McKee, the Stanford quarterback at 188. And Moro Ojomo, the defensive interior player at 249. I think when you look at this draft, it is quintessential. I mean, the first five picks. You got two line picks, right? Like their bread and butter has been offensive, defensive line picks, sinking high assets into these picks. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but in the long run, it seems to really help them out. Their first three picks are all line picks, one offensive, two defensive. And then you go and you get a safety in the third round. It's, and then a corner in the fourth. I mean, it felt like a great draft. It feels like, I don't understand how he's always able to do this. But one general manager, I was talking to him early this morning, and he just said it's availability. He said one of the things that Howie is for everyone else is he engages in everything. He wants to be a part of everything. He wants to talk about everything. He wants to talk about every tradable player, DeAndre Swift, they obviously go and get from the Lions for the fifth round pick, another Georgia guy. He likes to have 50 irons in the fire. And that, I think, at least in the eyes of this other general manager, is part of what makes him good at what he does, because he is constantly poking and prodding and fiddling and trying to constantly find out what everybody else is doing. Who's available? What are people talking about? He's probably the most gossipy general manager in the history of the NFL. And that's saying something, because there are some gossipy ass general managers in the NFL.
The report that came out where it said that, I forget who put it out there, that other GMs are annoyed with, you know, the praise that Howie Roseman gets in the media. But like what you described to me is just someone doing their job in this role. Do your job, guys. Like, you guys are out here complaining about, oh, Howie Roseman gets all this. Well, why didn't you call about DeAndre Swift? I'm sure he could have helped your football team out. Why didn't you make these savvy trades to move on from a quarterback when you knew that it was time to do that? Don't sit here and complain because he's doing like the bare minimum of what Madden players do when they start a franchise. Get your ass on the phone and call someone. Stop complaining about this. I couldn't believe when I saw people complaining about Howie Roseman getting praise. The guy built two Super Bowl contenders in a five-year span with two different quarterbacks. What are we supposed to do? Just ignore him and act like that's not happening? And then you look at this draft class. Yeah, arguably the best player in the draft in Jalen Carter at 9 with a throwaway pick from the Saints. You get a 4-3 edge rusher at 30th. And then you come back in the fourth round and trade up for a cornerback that was projected as like a top 60 pick for the majority of the draft season. It's not overthinking it. It's making it easy. And they've assembled a crazy, crazy football roster just by, you know, doing the things that a general manager should do and being diligent, being gossipy. I'm tired of these complacent executives complaining about Howie Roseman just doing his job. How about that?
So in summary, C-Mac is going to complain about people complaining about Howie Roseman. Like, just stop the complaint.
That's right.
When you look at it, it's like, let actions speak louder than words. And we're not going off of Howie's words. We're going off his actions. We're going off their track record of success that C-Mac just laid out pretty clearly. And we're going off the fact that they even have draft capital like this after the year they just had in going to the Super Bowl. And oh, by the way, look at the value they just got for the capital once they had it. I mean, when I'm going through their draft afterwards and seeing that they got like two high first round talents in that first round at 10 and 30, it's like reminding me, hey, maybe what we were saying about the Texans the other day, like how strongly do I feel about that? I still think the Texans need their players, but this is like peak example of the value of a trade down. The fact that the Eagles were able to just get that top 10 pick. So, I mean, I think that he deserves the credit he's getting. The only question I would have, and especially our Georgia fan over here, C-Mac, I'd love to know your opinion on it, is that clearly these guys have played really well. I'm not saying they've all like peaked already, but is there any sense from which you say like, I don't know, like if you go so many Georgia players, so many guys from this national championship team that maybe you're not fully exploring the creativity you should, or is it just this is a really good team? I guess the other aspect of that is that if you're already a team that just went to the Super Bowl, maybe you want guys who can play now and not guys who might project well in 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, I think at least with the Jalen Carter pick, they got someone who can play now. Mm-hmm. Right. Fletcher Cox is back on a one-year deal. It's not going to stick around there forever. And I get the concern, like, because I kind of feel the same way, you know, even as a Georgia fan, like, damn, like you're really drafting all these guys, not even from the same school, but from the same defense, like within the 2 year stretch, like all these guys right. Went together for that 2021 team that kicked off the back-to-back titles. But then you also look at like the athletes that Georgia is putting into the NFL and 2021, like dude, their punter ran a 4.5. Jordan Davis and Devontae White are out here running 4.7s. Nolan Smith's hitting a 4.3. And I think like just when you look at the
traits the in draft addition in to general, the performance.
Right. Like if I was drafting, I would be going after just athletes, like having weighing athleticism over more than other things. Because, you know, I think when you're in the NFL, you should be able to teach guys some stuff. But I can't teach you how to be 240 pounds and run a 4.3. And Georgia just happens to be producing a lot of those guys right now. I do think it's kind of funny though that, you know, whether it's Jordan Davis, N'Kobe Dean, Kelee Ringo, Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, that's five guys who were on the Georgia defense over the past 2 years. I would say you better hope this pans out, or else people are going to be looking at like, were you really out here like trying your hardest trying to find these guys, or just
did Georgia pay you? Picks?
I mean, come on. Wait a minute. When we watched that Georgia team in 2021, we're like, this is a historically good college defense in terms of the talent. And wow, what a shock. Like they all got drafted. Why should he let other people draft from a historically good defense? Let's be honest. Kirby Smart, Georgia, they basically stolen Alabama's lunch, right? The last couple of years. They took what Alabama did. He learned there. He goes to Athens, and now he has basically installed that type of culture, that type of recruiting. The recruit profiles, the players that he goes after are typically the kind of players we always expected to end up at Alabama. Well, now they're ending up at Georgia. And now that pipeline is spilling into the NFL. And so far, let's wait and see. I mean, maybe could Jordan Davis be a bust? Sure. Could N'Kobe Dean be a bust? Sure. I think it's great they didn't have to play their first year as rookies. I think it's great that they had a chance to, you know, be rotational guys, sit back, let other veterans put the culture in place, show them what it is. Now you've got a bunch of Georgia guys who came from their own culture in a Georgia program. I would say, at least on the field, definitely a good culture. My concern is, okay, Jalen Carter, I need to know that the player who was considered the number one pick in the draft in terms of just pure talent, what he had to offer, ceiling, now goes ninth, okay? And he went past Seattle, right? Seattle that had a need. Seattle that takes players that have concerns off the field, not good. Detroit, okay, which could have put him next to Aiden Hutchinson and, you know, take a huge leap forward in terms of the defensive front, okay? Pass him there. Any number of teams ahead of that ninth pick, it concerns me that those teams passed and Howie Roseman was willing to take him on. Now, I said before, and I'll say it again, Jordan Davis, from what I understand, was, you know, kind of his big brother in the program, took him under his wings, you know, just someone who was very close to Jalen Carter. And part of the thought process and them feeling solid was that they have players who know Jalen Carter. They have a guy who's very close to him that's going to be in meeting rooms with him. And that's going to help be the community to take a player who is seen as being very immature going through this process and bring him to maturity on the NFL level. We'll see if that works. I don't know if it will or not. It's going to make a ton of money now. If you're going to be immature, it's a lot easier even when you're out of college, when you have millions of dollars at your disposal. There's a whole new level of immaturity that can open up to you. So we'll see. Yeah. You know, we'll see if it works out. He rolled the dice
way, way too knowingly, C-Mac. You said that way too knowingly.
Man, I was broke as hell in D.C. having the time of my life, man. So like, I can imagine all kinds of trouble I would have gotten up to if I had like a $20 million signing bonus just handed to me.
Yeah. Well, that's part of the dice roll here. Like, we're patting Howie in the back and everything, which I think is absolutely warranted. But this one was a risk, and it was unusual. Like, he doesn't take players. I mean, if you go back historically and look at his draft picks, he doesn't, especially at the top, doesn't really roll the dice on, you know, someone that really could go off the, you know, go off the rails in terms of what you expect. Yeah. And so we'll see. But I did like their class.
I think the Eagles were a right spot to land for him. I don't know how to feel about, you know, you're back with all your buddies. And, you know, the last time you were at Georgia, not something great happened. That's a little bit concerning. But I do like the idea of, like, we have someone who is still learning how to be an adult. We know he's supremely talented. Let's stick him with Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham. Just say, hey, this is your little baby project for the summer. Get Jalen to be not a moron sometimes. And I think that just from a locker room perspective, having those two guys around is a good fit. And getting Nolan Smith in there is good too, because, you know, as much as we talk about the athleticism, he's one of like the few guys from that program over the past few years where people just rave about his character on and off the field too. So maybe that can be a positive influence on him. But I do find myself getting a little bit concerned, like, going back with all your old buddies who played the same position as you. Just need to keep an eye on how that one turns out.
Well, hopefully they have the veterans, you know. I, again,
yeah.
As you said, Fletcher Cox is back, okay? Brandon Graham. You have guys in the program who know what it took to get there, who have been in the NFL for a long time, know what it takes to stay, stick, develop, be stars at your position, handle big contracts. And hopefully that's all part of what gets bestowed upon everybody else who comes in. So any other, you know, we give Philly all the love and everybody's been talking about Philly and I've seen enough A pluses to, you know, choke a horse at this point. Can we find another class that we like that is not so readily obvious?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the winning classes were coming from the state of Pennsylvania because I just think the Steelers crush this draft. I mean, you start off with pick number one. They move up from 19 to 14, trade with the Patriots and get Broderick Jones, the tackle out of Georgia. And you're like, okay, well, remember, the Jets had traded down from the Packers 13 to 15. So it was one pick before the Jets. Aaron Rodgers needs this protection. And it's like, nope, we're going to get him for Kenny Pickett instead. So you start there. And then in the second round, they had the first overall pick of the second round, which was number 32 because the Dolphins didn't have a pick. And you get Joey Porter Jr., the cornerback, whose dad also played for the Steelers. And a lot of people thought he was going to go in the first round. And it's like, so now you've got two first rounders that you're up to. A guy who you know very deeply. He was friends with Mike Tomlin's son, so you've got an understanding of the character background. He's got that press corner ability, and I just think that – and remember, you had that deal because you traded Chase Claypool to the Chicago Bears. So it's like essentially switching out Chase Claypool for 4 years of Joey Porter Jr. under contract. Like, I'll take that. And then you go into Keanu Benton, Wisconsin defensive tackle. Yeah, they brought back Larry Ogunjobi, but they really needed help in that interior D-line. And oh, by the way, in the third round, they got Georgia tight end Darnell Washington because everyone from Georgia goes to Pennsylvania. But still, like, that was a really high-value pick too. And I also, if you go and look at the picks that the Steelers had, they made seven picks in this draft, six of which involved trades at some point, whether that was Chase Claypool way back when or trading up to get Broderick Jones. And so I feel like the Steelers just went in with a plan. They understood their needs. They understood the value, and they weren't afraid to make the move. And I know we talked about this on a broader and more extreme scale with Houston, but to make like very like slight trades up for all these things, like they weren't giving up a lot necessarily, but they were getting really strong value at positions of needs. And I just think that that's super impressive, especially in a tough division like they're going to have this year.
Yeah. Omar Khan seemed really decisive. You know, I like to see when general managers identify guys that they want and they make, and again, if you don't have to give up a ton, being able to move these little micro moves in the draft, a couple, you know, spots here, a couple spots there. I did think that, you know, the Jets one comes to mind. You think they're definitely going to address offensive tackle. I was fine with them getting Will McDonald, you know, the edge out of Iowa State instead. But yeah, you know, you kind of thought there was probably a first round asset there for a tackle spot, and it didn't end up happening. What about you, C-Mac? Actually, you know what? I wanted to ask you specifically, C-Mac, about the Seattle draft. They take Devin Witherspoon at number 5, the corner out of Illinois. The speed in that secondary is just going to be sick. They take Jackson Smith and Jigba at the 20th pick overall, which makes sense. You know, Tyler Lockett is, I think, not long for the franchise. This is probably, you look at his contract, they're not going to pay him $15 million next year. So it's kind of an out after this year. I would expect he slides into the number 2 after 2023. They take Edge, Derek Hall out of Auburn in the second round. And then they take Zach Charbonnet out of UCLA also in the second round, the running back. And I thought it was interesting because, you know, Kenneth Walker was, they had already expended a second round asset on Kenneth Walker. Now you bring in Zach Charbonnet, who's another second round pick. So you have two cheap running backs, but they seem complementary, but also both physical. They have size, you know, the profile of what they can do is somewhat similar. I like it. I like that rotation. I like that you're not spending a lot of money on these two players, both having come from the second round. You know, overall, I think the first four picks to me, I was like, this is a great foundation for this draft. It was like the opposite of Detroit. I understood every single one of those picks that they made. And even though they took Witherspoon instead of taking Carter, which I really thought they would take Carter, it shocked me that they didn't. When I look at that secondary now, I'm like, holy, like that is a, it's just a group that's got, you know, talent, speed, youth, a lot to work with moving forward. It just feels like the Seattle turned themselves around pretty quickly after what kind of felt like they were ready for a collapse. When Russ went out the door, it was like, uh-oh, like there's a little mini collapse like going on right now in Seattle. Suddenly I'm like, no, they're right back on their feet again. And this looks like a team that's trending upward in 2023 and beyond.
I think Geno Smith might be one of the biggest winners of the of the draft this year. For kind of like for the same, like I was thinking the same thing about Desmond Ridder too. Like both guys, you survived the quarterback.
They didn't go get anybody.
Onslaught. Yep. Like at the top of the draft. Didn't go get one. And as far as, you know, Desmond goes, you got Bijan, you got an offensive lineman. As far as Geno goes, you got Jaxon Smith-Njigba, you got Zach Charbonnet. I was a little confused with the Charbonnet pick just because, you know, you just spent a second on Kenneth Walker last year. Maybe this is just like the jaded Kenneth Walker fantasy owner in me and being like, God damn it. Like, why did this happen to me?
But, thank you for your transparency.
Yes, exactly.
Just be a little bit transparent. When that pick went in, I was freaking out. I was texting everyone. Is Ken Walker hurt? Did I miss something here over the past few weeks? But, you know, I think it was a little bit confusing just as far like an asset allocation resource goes. But just as far as like building the core of this team, like their running back room is totally set. You got Ken Walker, Zach Charbonnet, and then Kenny McIntosh, who they picked in like the sixth round this year. He kind of reminds me of like a little James White kind of running back, not super dynamic, but caught a whole lot of passes at Georgia. And I think he rounds out that room pretty nicely. And then the Jaxon Smith-Njigba pick, that's a pick that can help you like make a playoff run this year. And it's going to help you in the future, because I think when you looked at Seattle's wide receiver room, the only thing that they were really missing was like a truly great slot receiver. And I think they just nabbed like one of the best slot receiver prospects over the past few drafts. So you have, at least just for this year, an offense that is going to get two tackles back who started 17 games as a rookie last year, and Charles Cross and Abe Lucas. You got Geno Smith, DK Metcalf, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Tyler Lockett, two running backs. I mean, they rebuilt this thing so quickly. And of course, all of it comes back to you got way better play out of Geno Smith than you were hoping. But still, I think it was cool to see Seattle kind of, you know, consolidate their resources to make this a better team now. And it gives Geno a better chance to succeed in the coming season. I thought what they did was actually pretty cool.
I thought it was crazy, too, when you look deeper in their draft, too. You get down to the fifth round, and they took Mike Morris, who was a decent edge coming out of Michigan, and who I think can develop into just being like a good starter, a good solid starter for you. You get that in the fifth. And then they took Oluwatimi, the center at Michigan, who, you know, you and I talked about. He ended up on the All-Juice team. That was me. I liked him. I thought, you know, I think he's a guy who can be a good, solid starter for you. That's the fifth round. And those were two really important pieces to Michigan's success last year in a playoff team that ran the living hell out of the ball, had a really good defense. And again, you get those guys in the fifth round. It's just like you mentioned with the, getting Kenny McIntosh in the seventh. I mean, it feels like all these guys could potentially make the team, right? It's a lot of picks. But it actually feels like you could look at this and go, they're not going to cut any of these guys. They're all going to make the active roster and they're all going to fill out the depth chart. And every time I feel like, okay, have we overrated John Schneider over the years? Has he had misses? Why do we keep thinking, you know, he's one of the best GMs in football? Then they do something and you're like, okay, I was wrong on Geno Smith. John Schneider was clearly right about that, you know. He has a draft class where you look top to bottom and you're like, they might all end up making the team, and some will be productive starters. Some might be stars. Some will be great depth. And then I think about Pete and I'm like, when is Pete going to start looking 70? Like when is Pete going to, at what point do we look at Pete and go, this guy is insanely, his age does not match it up at all with what he looks like or how he acts when you see him coach. And it's like another 10 years in this regime now. That's what it feels like coming off of an off season like this. And then kind of what they did last year, it just feels like they're right back up again. It's crazy.
Pete Carroll's going to live forever.
I swear to God.
That's my takeaway.
I swear to God. I don't know what.
Shanahan doesn't know if he's going to live until Sunday, but Pete Carroll, he's living forever.
Pete Carroll doesn't have that problem.
Yeah. He's not chewing gum. He's chewing stem cells every time we see him. I'm like, I have no clue. That's a take.
Reckless speculation.
Yeah, there you go. Anybody, anybody you guys liked in terms of the all juice team fits? I liked Will McDonald with the Jets. I love that defense, and I love seeing him added to that. I think that front's going to be just awesome. Like to me, Robert Saleh's got to be like, I'm just jacked right now with that defense. They're going to be, as long as McDonald lives up to that, you know, what he could be. I loved that pick. It made me really happy.
I was a little worried while the draft was going on because it felt like we had overshot some of our projections.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like where there were guys, because I remember by the end of round two, like we were all texting. I was like, damn, dude. Like I was excited because I feel like we had done a good job like putting the team together. But at the same time, I was like, I'm going to need a couple of these guys to fall so that we don't look like jackasses when we come back and pat ourselves on the back in a few days. But then we were blessed with, unfortunately for him, Osiris Torrance falling down to this end of the second round, which kind of balanced us out a little bit. I thought that was a great pick for the Bills. I think when you look at what they've needed for a long time, it's just, you know, we talked about Lamar Jackson and Cam Newton at the start of the podcast. I don't think that Josh Allen is really like that far off from them in terms of just like overall, how much of the offense do I have to carry? I know that Stephon Diggs is a standout wide receiver and they've made, you know, an unbelievable amount of plays together, but you know, they just needed someone else to come in and get through the heavy lifting. So, you know, you go out and you sign Damien Harris in free agency, which kind of gives you a power element that you didn't really have outside of Josh Allen quarterback runs. And then you just go get this ass kicker up front in Torrance. I was a little surprised he fell as far as he did. I guess there's some concern with the medicals, but man, that was a great pick by the Bills. And I'm really excited to see how he fits in that system.
Yeah, I think I'd say the two for me are Zay Flowers, Boston College receiver, ending up in Baltimore. I mean, as we mentioned before, just to get with a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, we've talked a lot, I feel like, about how Zay Flowers didn't have a lot around him at Boston College. And I feel like, CRB, you were hearing that from a lot of guys. Just like he was making do and he didn't transfer. He kind of kept going with what he had.
Yep.
Yeah, and so now it's like, okay, well, why don't you join Odell and Lamar? Like, what a step up for him. So that was super exciting. I really liked that. And then obviously a little bit something I'm familiar with, but the Cavaliers took Michigan defensive tackle Mazi Smith, and maybe they took him a little bit high, but I think one, stopping the run has been a huge problem for the Cavaliers for years. And two, I just think when you have a guy like him come in and playing for Dan Quinn, I just really trust Dan Quinn's ability to develop a defensive lineman. And so I think that he'll be surrounded by players like Micah Parsons. They might have a little bit of a vision for him to have that versatility of maybe primarily play interior, but pass rush a little bit, kind of see what he can do. I think that that's going to be really fun to see his development there.
Yeah, I love him going to Quinn too, because I think, you know, when we were putting that team together, and I talked to some teams about him that had brought him up. I remember one guy saying to me, he was like, well, look, the funny thing about him is you look at the size and you automatically think, well, just run plugger. But they're like, really, he's kind of athletic. And the part of his game that will actually grow or could grow exponentially is how he plays against the run, which is wild because you're like, well, you already have the asset you need. You're huge. Like, you're giant, you're strong, and you have good feet. So, you know, you just got to figure out basically the technique and, you know, be put in the right spot to play the run the way that however the Cowboys want to scheme it. I did like that one a lot. The Zay Flowers pick, I love it because I remember when Steve Smith went to the Ravens and there was just sort of this like, what does he have left? And then Steve Smith was like brilliant with the Ravens. Like he just watching him play in that uniform was such a joy. And now you have this guy coming out who, again, is compared a lot to Steve Smith just in the way that he competes and is aggressive and fights in his routes. It'll be fun to kind of see. And then, you know, same kind of stature and everything. Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun to see that. I did want to ask C-Mac, though. The Steelers take Darnell Washington in the third. Explain to me, like, how does that work now with Freiermuth? Because I have Freiermuth on my dynasty team. And I was like, why are you taking a tight end?
Someone else is sweating too. Like,
why are you adding a guy to the mix? You got Freiermuth. Don't mess with him. Like he blossomed it last year.
Leave the unit alone.
Yeah. Does this mean?
I mean,
does
to
mean,
start off, right?
Like, okay,
I don't think this hurts Pat.
Does this mean that Pat just doesn't have to block now? Like that, if that's fine. Like, does this takes Pat out of the blocking necessity and puts him more into routes? Awesome. I'm happy about that.
For now, at least, we got to see how Darnell develops. Like, you know, I say this to someone who watched him play every single game he played at Georgia. Got a little carried away with like how complete his game was. Like, the athleticism is crazy. The blocking is stellar. But like, there's a stat that I saw against man coverage. You know, there's a stat called yards per route run, where basically just how many yards you have divided by how many routes you've run versus specific coverage. And Darnell Washington averaged 0.5 yards per route run against man coverage last year. I think some of that has to do with Stetson Bennett, but he's not a guy that's like, it's a polished receiver entering the league. So I don't think that Freiermuth is in jeopardy this year as far as targets go, but as Darnell gets better, more accomplished, and that dog comes out of his chest, you know, he needs to sweat. He needs to start sweating. Just like I'm sweating with the goddamn Kenneth Walker stuff.
Well, yeah, Jory, get used to this, by the way, because we're not. Yeah,
I know, I like it.
Charles and I are just, we're both in the same dynasty league, and so we're both like sweating. Real quick, I do want to hit this really quickly. If we can just make this like a quick 5 minutes, the quarterbacks, where they ended up in terms of like who ended up in the best situation versus one that I'm going to watch really closely. I will just say Levis in Tennessee. I know Titans fans are really excited. I'm going to watch that one closely. I'm just really, I'm
a tough spot.
It's not just that it's a tough spot, but I'm like, that to me, you passed on him once. Okay. For a guard.
Right.
Okay. And granted, I get it. It's a guard. Everyone's like, you know, over the moon for fine. But again, I think we're still figuring out in Tennessee how it all works. Who's got the power, who's selecting players, who has the roster, who's making the talent assessments. Me personally, if you had asked me which quarterback in there would you match up with like a Mike Vrabel type or their OC, I would not have picked Levis. I wouldn't have. And I don't think that whole idea of submitting their bids to Arizona for that third pick, my understanding, that was a Stroud situation. That was not a Levis situation. And so, I don't know. I'm just really curious. The personality of Levis became such a big deal in the process. And knowing what other people, you know, kind of, it was this line between like cocky and arrogant. I don't know that that's the quarterback I would necessarily stick with Mike Vrabel, is like a guy who you're like, is he being cocky or is he being arrogant? Again, this will piss off Tennessee fans because they just want to be happy about this, but I'm going to watch that one. I'm going to be very curious to see how that develops in Tennessee.
Yeah, I think there's a degree to which the value was strong enough that it's hard not to take him where they took him when they don't have their quarterback figured out. But that doesn't mean that they're totally sold on him. I would be curious. Again, one, I don't, like, he doesn't need to be ready this year. So there's that. But two, is there any chance that they deal him? I mean, like, I don't know anything specific about this, but like, would Shanahan like a guy like that? And then you can get Trey Lance with your Rand Carthon. Like, is there any sense that he could be more of an asset than someone you develop in-house? But in terms of like quarterback who I think landed in the best spot, I think Bryce Young, and I don't just think that because he's the number one overall pick. I just think typically when you're the number one overall pick as a quarterback, you do not land at a team that just had like really tough fights the second half of the season prior. You don't usually land with a coaching staff like Frank Reich and Thomas Brown, an offensive coordinator, and a couple other guys in that building who understand what it takes for you to be successful. And you don't usually have a series of veteran weapons like Miles Sanders at running back, Adam Thielen at receiver, Hayden Hurst at tight end, who maybe they're not like all top of the line at their position, but they're all very solid to really good. And I think that they also just have a lot of experience to help bring you along and sort of like speed up that development. So I think that for him, and you have guys in Houston and in Indianapolis who might have a little bit of time, but in Indianapolis, Anthony Richardson, because he needs the playing time, is going to have the spotlight on him probably before he's ready and intensified by an owner like Jim Irsay. So I just feel like when you think about the weapons they have and the surroundings that they have, Bryce Young is just like more positioned to succeed in the next couple of years than Richardson or Stroud.
I like where CJ Stroud went. I'm intrigued by what the Texans are trying to do on offense so far. And I think when you look at, you re-signed Laremy Tunsil, Tytus Howard has developed into a really solid right. offensive lineman for them. You trade for Shaq Mason. Dameon Pierce is there. It's not like, oh God, he's walking into right. something that is just
John totally. John Mechie's you know, coming back in the fold, right?
Right. Right. Then you add a Tank Dell, another all-juice team guy at the top of the third round. It's not like he's entering a situation where, you know, he's going to have to do like 100% of the heavy lifting. I mean, it's going to be tough because it's not like this is, they have the number two overall pick for a reason. It's not a great team, but I do think just like the starting pieces for CJ Stroud that they have in Houston is kind of intriguing. And they're going to be trying to install that Shanahan type passing game. So, Could be a little bit easier for him maybe than we're thinking right now based on what we've seen from the Texans in past years. But I don't think it's as terrible a situation that maybe it seemed a few months ago.
When you look at the – mostly I was just always nervous about, like, who's he going to throw to? You know, who's – like, what pieces can they potentially add? And it's not
– That's still a little tough.
Yeah, it's – well, it is. It's still a little tough. But, I mean, like, if it, you know, as long as – the right quarterbacks don't have expectations on him. It's like Anthony Richardson. I don't like that you already have, you know, you already have the owner. Ursa's out here talking about him starting already, you know? And he's tweeting crazy stuff, you know?
Like crazy
the,
stuff.
Yeah, the second round, like, oh, should go
we,
to Levis.
Should we get another quarterback?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, even the, like, should we go get Levis? But then he goes, so we have Montana and Young. And I'm like, great. So now already Anthony Richardson's like a multiple Super Bowl. Yeah, let's go ahead and compare him to Joe freaking Montana. Like, what do you do? Like, I get it. It's okay. Fun, but come on, man. Like, just pump the brakes and let the kid breathe a little bit.
Jim, I think your timeline's a little mixed up there too on the Joe Montana, Steve Young thing. Yeah. They were not in the same draft class.
They weren't.
Not even close.
I think he just was like, do you want us to have two? Just such a great problem at quarterback, you know, between these two guys. I mean, whatever. It's just
I can see it now. Jim okay. Irsay, he's got his feet kicked up in the draft room with his phone in one hand, a Pall Mall 100 burning in the other. And he's ready to tweet, man.
Okay, I will say another winner, I think, in terms of this whole quarterback landing spot situation, are AFC South fans. Like, they've got Trevor Lawrence, Anthony Richardson, CJ Stroud, probably within a couple of years, Will Levis. I'm not saying they're all going to be good, but I do think they're going to be intriguing to watch. And so then my question would be, so Trevor Lawrence will finish up his fourth year, enter his presumable fifth year option after the 2024 season. So after 2024, who do you guys think will be the best quarterback in the division among Trevor Lawrence, Anthony Richardson, CJ Stroud, and Will Levis?
Come on. Trevor. It's going to be Trevor. I mean,
okay, second.
Look, Richardson, Richardson could be amazing. He could be. I mean, he could be, you know, teams, you talk to people, they agree. They're like, look, the package of the skill set that's there. It's just like Allen, the skill set that was there for Allen was just insane. Like, it was nuts. It was like, if this guy develops, he's going to be an unbelievable player. And that's what he turned into. Richardson, it's the same situation. I mean, he's got the athletic profile is off the charts, arms fantastic. Like, yeah, if he develops, he could be absolutely amazing. I say Trevor just because I think what we saw last year was what we expected in him being that supposed generational pick. And I believe in that now that we've seen it. Richardson, I don't know, but you're right. It's going to be really interesting. It's going to be fun to kind of watch because, God, that was, it was an ugly looking, you know, like going into this draft, it's funny because you're like, oh, God, what an ugly looking, you know, division in terms of quarterbacks. And now we'll be watching them nonstop next year. So I real quick before we go.
Black quarterbacks are so in.
Yeah, it's trendy. It's super trendy.
Yeah, waiting for this my whole life.
It was like Get Out, right? Like, it's everybody wants black quarterbacks now. Like,
we're in equality. We have reached racial hubris in America through the NFL draft.
Tip of the cap to the Rams for drafting, I guess I would say, Sean McVay's version of himself to play quarterback. Like, I don't like, if you could have asked me, like, what quarterback do you think most resembles Sean McVay, like, in totality, I would have been like, probably Stetson Bennett. So, yeah.
Okay. I have one last draft thing before I get this out of my brain entirely. Do you believe Les Snead when he says Stetson Bennett was his favorite quarterback in the draft?
He may just not have looked at the first rounders because he didn't need to.
Right. I mean, that's like, come on. That's like being broke and being like, the Honda Civic was my favorite car of all time. What,
like 2016?
Like, listen.
So he might have just forgotten those. He doesn't send his scouts to the combine. He hasn't drafted in the first round, like 7 years.
You think he didn't even look at the other quarterbacks?
Hey,
he might not know they were in. No, I actually love Les, but like, for the purposes of this ridiculous conversation, maybe he didn't know who they were.
I'm not going to let him out that easy because their first pick was at 36 and Will Levis went at 34. So yeah. Don't. Okay, unless maybe he thinks Stetson Bennett is better than Will Levis, which as a
or he didn't think Will Levis was going to go down to 34.
Go Dogs.
If you can afford a Honda Civic, you love a Honda Civic.
C-Mac is so done, he's like circling.
We'll be back on Wednesday. We're going to close this one out. You can get Jory Epstein on Twitter at Jory Epstein. You can get C-Mac at 4verts. You can get myself at Charles Robinson and our ace producer Stone Rochelle at SJ Rochelle. Remember, always help us keep Terez Paylor's legacy alive. Jory, representing today with the Breaking Tea, All Juice Tea. You can get one of those. The new design, by the way, the black crispies. Damn, I love those.
Get the full All Juice
Tea. Yeah, that guys. Thing's awesome. Yeah, it's crisp. I like this one. By the way, we saw some GMs and maybe future GMs wearing All Juice Teas and hoodies on Sunday. That was pretty cool. But you can get those at breakingtea.com/Terez. Remember that proceeds go to support the Terez A. Paylor Scholarships at Howard University and Missouri. Check out our new NBA podcast, Ball Don't Lie, featuring Vinny Goodwill, Jake Fisher, and Dan Devine, and our new MLB podcast, Bandwagon, featuring Hannah Kaiser and Zach Kreiser, both available wherever you get your podcasts. Remember to leave a 5-star review. Tell a friend. We will see you on Wednesday. Probably not C-Mac, though, because he's going to go hibernate like a bear for the next couple
yeah,
months.
Yeah, enjoy. Listen
Ain't
to this
no probably,
one twice.
So definitely.
Listen to this episode twice because it might be the last year of C-Mac for a while.
All right. We'll see you then.
I'm gone.
Peace.